cosa leggerai con calibro affascini il tuo cuore.
And I am your host of Love, Lust and Laughter. Don't think that was my music, and we haven't won yet. We have a lot of problems. We're going to talk some about these problems that exist and some solutions that seem to be coming our way. Once again, my guest is Dr. Carol Queen. Hello, Carol Queen.
Hello, Dr. Diana. I'm so glad to be with you again.
Well, I'm glad that you're with us, Dr. Carol. Dr. Carol, I want to read you what I wrote about her in my new book, Love in the Time of Corona, Advice from a Sex Therapist for Couples in Quarantine, my new book. And we have a section, Learn More About Sex, and so Dr. Carol's book was mentioned. And it says, The Sex and Pleasure Book, Good Vibrations Guide to Great Sex for Everyone, Carol Queen, PhD. This book draws on, this is what I wrote about her book. This book draws on the vast and diverse experience of the customers of Good Vibrations, the legendary feminist adult toy store founded in San Francisco in 1977. Back then, the store made waves with its focus on sex education and women's pleasure. Today, Dr. Carol Queen is a Good Vibrations staff sexologist, and she's extremely knowledgeable, informing, and inspiring sexual comfort and exploration. You know, I lived in Palo Alto for 20 years. You know this, Carol, but some of the listeners may not. And so, and I remember when Good Vibrations first opened, and it was really something, and I would go to the store in those early years, and even in some later years, and sent clients there. And you, Carol, said that a lot of the things that are happening now couldn't be happening if it hadn't been for Good Vibrations and being in San Francisco. Can you tell us a little bit? We're going to talk, by the way, let me just, before you start, we're going to talk about the Supreme Court's LGBTQ decision yesterday. We're going to talk about a book of Carol's that she wrote some years ago called Exhibitionism for the Shy. And we're going to talk about sex toy trends and maybe even, since this is Men's Health Week at Good Vibrations, maybe even some men's health tips as well as some sex toys. So that's a lot. So
tell us, Carol. We'll do it.
Yeah, we can do it. Carol's just a great guest. You're so articulate and knowledgeable. So why was Good Vibrations in San Francisco in the right place at the right time back in the late 70s?
Well, the 1970s were just a very, very interesting decade, you know, following up on the 60s with all of the protests, all of the cultural change that happened back then, the so-called sexual revolution. It didn't die out right away, that's for sure, because San Francisco in the 1970s was really probably the city in the United States where these alternative ideas found the most purchase, and people were more comfortable in San Francisco, not to say that everyone was, but more comfortable with the gay community. The therapy world began to try to take trans people seriously and do a better job with transgender folks. There was a lively sexuality community that had to do with both kink and play parties, swingers, that sort of thing. And of course, both San Francisco Sex Information and the Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sexuality were founded and were helping to educate people, turn out new sex therapists or clinical sexologists. Spicy ran a sex hotline. There was a lot going on in San Francisco that wasn't necessarily going on to that degree in other, or as diversely in other cities around the country. And so that's why I say that I don't think Good Vibrations could have actually risen up at that time anywhere else. It wouldn't be the same anyway. And And even though Good Vibrations wasn't founded by the LGBT community, it was always part of founder Joni Blank's perspective and mission to have the doors open to everyone and try to have the materials that would be useful to everyone, women especially, but of all orientations. So I stepped into that in 1990, and it was like a dream come true and like coming home. But its history, I think, is tied up in the very same movements that finally led to this Supreme Court decision. It's been decades, but the decades were full of activists the entire time trying to get to this point.
Yes, and so the groundwork was laid in San Francisco. And it makes
not
sense.
Not only San Francisco, but especially San Francisco, yeah.
Especially, yes. And we had the Supreme Court's LGBTQ decision made yesterday, a tremendous decision. U.S. Supreme Court affirmed that workplace civil rights protections extend to gay and transgender people. And the timing of this is wonderful because it comes just as the nation grapples with continuing an unequal treatment of color, despite a lot of promises. What's been some of the reaction you've heard in San Francisco about the Supreme Court decision of yesterday?
Well, this is a community that still has a lot of LGBTQ activists, of course, and this is such an important decision that people are pretty thrilled about it, pretty happy, very happy. But also there is still obviously work to do to make sure that people of all colors get equal support and protection under these kinds of decisions. So nobody thinks that all of the work is done, even though it's a good possibility that other elements that spun off from the 1964 Civil Rights Act, different decisions that were made subsequent to that that mentioned on the basis of sex, discrimination on the basis of sex may be in the target for other kinds of discrimination now. And that's an extremely significant thing. But we have to remember that the Civil Rights Act also said you couldn't discriminate on the basis of race, or color, national origin, all of those things. And we certainly have seen in the last number of years, in the case of race and skin color pretty much ongoingly, that even if there's a law, that doesn't mean everybody follows and abides by the law. So I'm sure that LGBTQ people are going to also have to be vigilant to keep the change that the Supreme Court decision implies in our civil rights.
I have a wonderful quote from our Washington State Senator Jamie Peterson. He's a Seattle Democrat in the legislature's LGBTQ caucus. And he said, "It really is a welcome respite to have something that's good for people."
Yeah.
"Good for the rule of law. Good to illustrate the whole government isn't broken and the courts can get something right." So this is a time to end culture wars over who deserves protection from discrimination. Because everyone deserves equal treatment and civil rights protection. And it's been such a battle for so many for so long. And maybe
right.
The protests now really, maybe they represent a real inflection point where some things do seem to be changing.
Well, some of the analysis that I read last night after this decision really spelled out that polling, including among independents and Republicans, The majority of people in this country don't think that people should be discriminated against on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. And that's a long time coming, and more people feel open to protections now than did just a few years ago. And I'm also seeing that more people are feeling open to protections and increased civil rights for and human rights for Black citizens than just 4 years ago. So this moment of rage and activism that we've been seeing for the last 2.5 weeks, it is making a dent. We're not sure yet how large a dent, but it is making a dent in people's denial. So I hope it's not going to take decades the way it did for LGBT rights to get a decision this positive when it comes to the people of color that are in this country also fighting for similar kinds of rights and more. But it gives me some hope. It really does. It looks like the needle is moving on public opinion in both of those ways. And that's really so important.
You put it so well, a dent in people's denial and that the needle is moving. Yes. And it's about time. But there's still a ways to go, and nobody wants to sit on their laurels, right? They've been working at this for way too long. And
yeah, it's
too important.
Yeah, it's a little early for while sitting. but thank goodness that we see some movement. That's the least we should see.
At the very least, yes. I was pleased, you know, I think we're both friends with Mark Schoen, the founder of Sex Smart Films.
Yes.
And he's just a wonderful man. He gave my book a really nice blurb. He says, it's a year's worth of sex therapy in one volume. That was generous. And I hope it's true. I think it is. Anyway, Mark Schoen's film, Trans, which was made about 10 years ago, is now number one on Amazon Prime. Have you seen the film Trans?
You know, I don't even think that I have. Now that it's on Amazon Prime, I should go and see
Well,
it.
Yes, and also if you go to sexsmartfilms.com, you can see it for, I think, you know, some of his films and videos are free, and others he charges for. And I think you can watch mm-hmm. the film on Sex Smart Films for free, for $2. I think it's $2, something like that. It's a moving film and beautiful. And I think he's helped the transgender community a lot starting, I think it was about 10 years ago, maybe a little more than that, that he made the film. So I recommend it. So, shall we move on to, do you have anything else you want to say about this Supreme Court decision that was made yesterday?
I just want to shout out that one of the things that was really extraordinary about this decision is that the majority opinion was penned by one of the conservative justices, and a lot of people in the conservative community have their little panties in a knot today. And
yep.
Yesterday there was a lot of outcry and Sturm und Drang there, but you know the culture wars are not over, but you don't always know where these things are going to land. That means we all need to stay vigilant. We all need to be activists who can be and support the activists who can get out there and be the point of the wedge. But we're at a time that we can see that change is possible. And in this particular time of in history, that's just so important. I want to make sure that everyone takes a deep breath and continues to push for progressive change.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is Pride Month. And
yes.
a lot of folks would be normally out and about celebrating with others. And that's been diminished a lot. or rescheduled. What is you, is that true from
well,
what's happening in San Francisco?
It depends on the venue. I think in the city and so forth. In San Francisco, I think there will be a lot of things that are online, but also I don't think that it's the parade has been moved up a few months. I think it's been postponed for the full year. The Los Angeles Pride that was last weekend was really basically given over to supporting Black Lives Matter, Black trans and queer folk, who especially trans women who are at such risk to almost everyone. And so there was a substantial march supporting all Black lives, is what they were calling it, there. And in Brooklyn, there was an enormous gathering to support trans women and call for justice for trans women. So some of the Pride events have sort of merged with the Black Lives Matter anti-police violence marches. And of course, we got to remember, Pride Month begins historically with the Stonewall riots in New York City in 1969, riots against police violence. So it all braids together, really, historically, then and now. It's been over 50 years, but we're still working on these issues, those communities in particular who are most impacted by badly behaving officials.
Well, there's got to be change, and it appears to be happening slowly.
Fingers all crossed for this.
Everything crossed.
Extraordinary time that we're living through right now. It's not an easy time, but it's an extraordinary one.
It's an extraordinary one, and so let's pivot to a little something a little lighter, and that is your book, Exhibitionism for the Shy. What year was it published?
95. It was my very first book. It wasn't my first published writing. I had been publishing erotic stories and essays already, but it was my very first full book, and intended to be a sexual self-help book like yours, with a focus on getting comfortable showing off your sexiness and feeling comfortable and confident in your erotic self, with exhibitionism as the root for that.
And I like your description, and I'm going to share it with the audience. Exhibitionism is a consensual erotic pleasure and a means to overcome shyness and body image issues. So you have exercises that feature erotic dress, talk, personas, and role play. And you you interviewed a lot of people. Annie Sprinkle, Nina Hartley, she has a blurb you may have noticed in my book. She's a friend, and she's a wonderful person. She's so bright and caring, and has been a porn actress for, well, probably 35 years or more. 35 years, yes.
Yeah.
And a sex educator. She has good sex ed. You probably carried some of them at Good Vibrations. Do you carry any sex ed videos?
We now have just streaming online video. We have a link for that. But from the very beginning that we carried videos at Good Vibrations, which I think started in 1989, having them in the stores, we always had Nina movies. We had her sex ed movies, as well as the things that she did with Candida Royale. She was right up at the top of my list when I made a list of people that I wanted to interview for the book. And the reason that I interviewed as many porn stars as I did is, of course, they are getting out there and doing it and at least looking comfortable, if not feeling completely comfortable. But in general, if somebody is an erotic performer, they have figured out how to cook up the persona that they feel most comfortable representing to the world, the things they like to do and show off. Those are professional skills for those folks. And I know that not everybody who explores exhibitionism will turn into a professional, although I did not foresee the advent of camming 25 years ago, and many more people make the leap to being a professional exhibitionist, or pro-am, I guess, now than I knew would in those days. So it's really a way to try to pull their insight out and represent it for as an honestly shy person at home who would really like to feel more comfortable but just doesn't know how to get there.
Well, something a little personal, but I think relevant for the conversation, is that in the early 70s, for about a year and a half, at a very large, luxurious hotel in Miami Beach called the Americana Hotel, I was a showgirl in a production called Mon Petit Amour. There were 6 dancers and 6 showgirls. So I had these beautiful feathers and all kinds of gorgeous costumes. And yes, I worked bare-breasted with glitter on my nipples.
Hooray!
My daughter laughs because sometimes she calls me glitter tits. And I did this, of course, years before I had her, my first child. And actually, wearing glitter on my nipples toughened my nipples, and it made it very good for breastfeeding later with her and then later with my son.
Well, that is a fun fact that I did not know.
Not very many
fun.
People know it.
Well, now, of course, I want to tell the people out there who want to glitter their nipples that they should wash it off before someone else puts their mouth on their nipples. Adult or child.
Oh, absolutely.
Glitter. You shouldn't be ingesting glitter, really.
No. This was instead of a pasty, we would put the glitter on with a little eyelash glue.
Yes. Oh, that's great.
But I learned how to present myself, and to be alluring on the stage, and of course the choreographer helped us do all of that. But so. My husband feels like he's a lucky man because I love to do a striptease. I love to wear different outfits. And not every time, but it's fun. And as I dance for him and remove clothing slowly, I can, as I watch his face getting more aroused, then I get more aroused too and moving with the music. So isn't that true about being the performer, so to speak, the exhibitionist, that it can increase your own arousal as well?
Absolutely. For one thing, particularly when you're dancing and moving, you're embodying your sexual allure in a very particular way. You're not lying there hoping that your body looks okay in the position that you've chosen to lie there, which, of course, it does. Everyone is lovely, but I think that there is so much concern and worry on the part of so many people, certainly cis women, because we were born in a time and a place and a culture that really encourages women to both be sexy and attractive and alluring, and also somehow really encourages us to worry about whether we're enough of those things. And sexual orientation and gender identity would play into this too. Not everybody wants to or can authentically, comfortably present in this super femme way with the nipple glitter and the feathers and people should relax. They don't have to go out and get a bunch of feathers if they want to do this. The feathers are
Oh no. And when I mention glitter and feathers, That was strictly on the stage. I did not do that in my personal life, and nor do I do it now. Well, maybe some feathers, you know, token feathers.
This was a time that, the door was closing a little bit on burlesque, but that was really the showgirl type of review. That was sort of a transitional form, wasn't it? I'm so interested that you did this. I should have interviewed you.
Oh, no. Well, no. I have only recently started to talk more about it in a public way. I revealed some of myself and the fact that I have a robust sex life with my husband in my book. So
yes,
I'm being more transparent, and why not? I have a story to tell, and I'm a well-balanced woman with a healthy libido, which is especially a wonderful thing because I'm a senior citizen. And
yes,
and sex is good for our health and good for our immune system and all of those things. But let's not go off in that direction right now because I want to talk a little more about your book, Exhibitionism for the Shy, which is available at Good Vibrations and on Amazon and other fine book sources. You're actually writing an updated version, aren't you?
Yeah, the updated version came out a few years ago. The original one, of course, 25 whole years ago. So yeah. I was able to add a few new interviews. I was so excited to get Margaret Cho as one of my new interviews. And not everybody knows this, but for a while there, Margaret was running a burlesque review and traveling from town to town with it. It was just one of the performative things that she did, and she had a really diverse group of people. It was fantastic. I was lucky enough to see it once. So I think that one of the things that the shy people always say is that they're worried that their partner is going to think that they're silly, not going to think they're attractive enough. And so the first message I want to send is that you are not doing this for your partner. You are, but you're not. You're doing it for yourself. You're doing
it for
the comfort, the fun, the ability to get more into what it is that you really like. Not everybody is going to be an exhibitionist in the same way. I include a lot of talk.
Yeah.
In my definition, and you know, it's still exhibitionism in my book. If you keep the lights on and pull the blackout curtains, but you're talking up a blue streak with your partner, or on the phone, or all by yourself for that matter, because my definition is about putting out your sexuality in a way that is arousing and erotic and feels good to you, and then if there's a partner in the room, they will love the results almost certainly, but it starts with you because comfort starts with you. You can't have your partner hand you comfort. That's not a thing that happens. The comfort starts inside. So that's what the exercises really are all about. The idea that you may not feel very comfortable in, you know, traditional bra and panties and stockings and high heels, but maybe there's something else that really makes you feel sexually powerful. Maybe it's BDSM garments, or maybe it's more butch. Maybe it's some other kind of presentation, but yet you feel sexier in that than you do in other kinds of erotic clothing. And mirror work to me is really important because the mirror allows you to practice some dance moves, sure. Practice taking off your garments in a striptease without falling on the floor. And if you do fall on the floor, just stay there and make some sexy leg lifts. That pro tip. By the way,
good exercise too.
Great exercise. It also lets you see your own engagement in the movement. You see, like, if most people like to move their body to music, at least if they have their eyes closed, you know, even if they don't think they're good dancers, the feeling of it is great. So start there if you have to. Close your eyes. Don't fall on the furniture, but close your eyes. And eventually, open your eyes, look in the mirror, and see how it changes you to let the music take over and to dance that way. It's and you can go all the way to masturbation if you want to.
Yes.
Nobody has to go further than they are comfortable with. That's part of my point here. If you're going to be more comfortable and more pleased with yourself and pleasured via exhibitionism, the way to get there is not to put yourself all the way out on the edge and scare yourself to death. Take baby steps. Just advance as far as feels good, because feeling good should be what sexuality is all about.
That's absolutely.
Some other, maybe the alarm just rang and you've got to make a baby right now and you've got to run to the bedroom and it doesn't really matter if anybody is aroused very much, but you're going to do it. Okay. That's another wonderful use of sexuality. But this one, and so many of the other things that we can do sexually, as you well know, I'm sure you talk to clients about this constantly, is about finding more pleasure.
Yes. And, Some people think that sex is just for procreation. Usually they're very religious types. But they don't think as much about recreation. But I've worked with Christian couples who have gone beyond the procreation. I mean, they come to me because, yes, within the bounds of marriage, they really do want a hotter sex life. And they want to stay monogamous and they want to turn the volume up on their monogamy and try some new things. I just had a Zoom session, teletherapy session with a client, and she happens to be a physician, and she started seeing me, well, started out in person about a year and a half ago, and she wanted to improve her own sexuality and her responsiveness to her husband. And they had always wanted a child, and she was coming up on the 35-point mark, which is when a lot of women have a little more trouble with fertility. And so she is now 4 months pregnant. So not only did she improve her sex life with her husband, but she's now pregnant. And she acknowledged how having more intercourse contributed. Well, that's the natural way to make a baby.
That makes
sense. Yeah. So we don't ever discount. I mean, we're driven to for sex and procreation, where that's how we're hardwired. But the recreational part is so important, isn't it? And just the pleasure. And what I really like what you say is, and kind of summarize before we move on to erotic talk, what you look like to others is not as important as how you feel experiencing eroticism and pleasure. I like how you bring it back, and you just were saying that too, how you bring it back to the individual, how you feel. Because then you can project much more authentically a sexy persona. Because you may begin to feel more sexy, and that's really sexy.
It's much, much easier to be playful and show off from that perspective, or from a, wow, this really turns me on perspective, than to grit your teeth and, you know, step out in the middle of the bedroom and totter on your heels and hope you don't fall down when you're taking your clothes off. I mean, it's just, you don't have to do it a certain way. You can find the way that works for you. And you know, the wonderful porn performer Aunt Peg, Juliet Anderson, who was actually one, she was the one who discovered me. Yeah, I found out.
She's the one who discovered what we have. I have a siren going on outside of my apartment
who
here.
Who discovered Nina Hartley and brought her into the movies. They were both based in Berkeley, California, which most people think of as the home of porn, but it was the home of both of them at that time.
That's right.
And Aunt Peg said something so wise. You know, she didn't start doing porn until she was over 40 years old. It's one of the reasons that they called her Aunt Peg, is that she was always sort of the older woman in these movies that she did. And at the end of her life, she was making her own erotic movies for elders. Hardly anybody has ever done that, and it was so significant. And she said, you know, women are wired or taught to think that people are judging our bodies and our looks. She said, that's not the way, in my experience, men operate. When they look at us, they look at us and they see what they like. They see what they're attracted to. They see the things that please them the most, and the other things fade into the background. Now, many of us have run into men who aren't very polite and who criticize, but that's not the kind of partner you want in the first place. And she really emphasized, don't think that they're looking at your body looking for flaws. They're looking at your body wanting to have intimate connection with their partner. And I think that's really reassuring, particularly to people who think they're too something, too big, too small, too old, any of the things that might be playing as loops in our head. I'm just so glad that she put it that way. I think it was really wonderful and wise.
I have seen her perform, and I got to meet her at a party in 1995 in San Francisco. Who knows? You might have been there. It was the 50th birthday party for...
Cat Sunlove? Was it Cat Sunlove's birthday party?
Yes, it was.
That was a great
party. Were you at that party?
I was there.
Yes, and I hung out a lot with Candida Royale, Candace. And I remember she was wearing this fuchsia, like rubber dress, I was wearing a fuchsia ball gown, strapless ball gown.
I hope you two got your picture taken together. That sounds wonderful.
I don't know where they are, though, but I do know that Michael Perry took some of them. You know Michael Perry. He's a very good photographer and a sex therapist, sexologist. But that was a fun party, and Juliet Anderson was featured.
Yes. Yes, she was such a fabulous, fabulous person, and is much missed, as is Candida. You know, there's a documentary film about Candida that came out a year or so ago. I'm glad that some of these really pioneers in the erotic world are being taken seriously and remembered. It's great. This has been an interesting 40 years, and we have witnessed it.
You know, last year in May, husband Brian and I went up to Vancouver, BC for the world premiere of the documentary Candace by Shona McDonald. And in fact, she did her documentary is mentioned in my book, and she did a blurb also. And we got to know the filmmaker. It was hard for me, as somebody who had known Candace and was good friends with her for like 20 years, it was hard for me to watch the documentary because it's all about her life toward the end of her life when she discovered that she had ovarian cancer and she was trying to find her mother. And but Candace, what a iconic pioneer in erotic filmmaking and focused on female pleasure. I just admired her so much and loved her. And it's fun to think back to 1995. I thought you might be there because it was in San Francisco.
Yep, wouldn't have missed it for the world. I was writing for Kat in those days. Kat was still publishing the Spectator magazine, that wonderful sex community paper that they published for years. It certainly seemed like everyone who was anyone was in that room. I'm sure that there were people who weren't there, but it felt like a it felt like a really significant gathering of people who were trying, especially women, who were trying to change the narrative, not only make things more sex positive, but give women more options. And of course, I care about this business for people of all genders and orientations. And I don't think any of us are handed comfortable sexuality on a platter, not even men, not even straight people. And that, you know, we all have to get through the thicket of the culture we grew up in order to really be ourselves. But this group of people that we're talking about now, they really, I think, made such a difference for women. And when you hear the young feminists now, you know, when they write for Cosmo and Bustle and Teen Vogue and all the places, you can hear these voices coming through that weren't present for me, or I imagine for you, when we were in our late teens, in our 20s. It's a new time. And I think it's because of people like Candace that this is the case. I can't speak too highly of the impact that she had. And also teaching people in a male-dominated porn industry that they could be more realistic, more sensitive, more erotic, more all kinds of things in the way that they depicted women. That's important, too.
Very important. And she took a big chance, because when she wanted to promote and distribute her films, the distributors didn't know what to do with her. There had never been female-directed and produced films before. And how would they be accepted?
Yeah, there was a category. Yeah, she was such a groundbreaker. And when she talked about it, you know, I've heard her talk at conferences and non-film, documentary films and all over the place. She always basically just says, why wasn't there something like this already? I knew that my work in front of the camera was not in vain when I realized that I could go behind the camera and bring a different perspective to this kind of movie.
Meantime, she was informed by her own work as a porn actress, starting in San Francisco.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
In the early 70s, I believe. Her first film was released, her first erotic film was released in 1984. So she was the first on the scene. Yes, I still miss her. She died in 2015, so 5 years ago. I still miss her. She was such a presence and such a wonderful, bright woman with a good moral compass, and just, you know, you cannot categorize these women at all.
Yeah. 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 I am so delighted. You may know this already, but there's a woman at Harvard who is writing a biography of her. And, you know, when I think back into the years when I stepped into this world of sexologists and sex positive feminists, I'm not sure I anticipated that any of us were going to get attention at that level of the mainstream and, you know, the intelligentsia and all of that. And I'm so grateful that her contribution is going to be recognized this way. I just think it's so significant. And hopefully your listeners will want to look forward to it.
Do you know who the person is at Harvard who's writing it?
Yes, I'll put you in touch with her.
Yeah, because I have a lot of stories to tell about Candace.
It sounds like you do. I didn't realize that you two were so close, and I'm really I hope that that I can connect you up with this writer, because I think that you know, every friend of someone who gets a biography ought to be able to weigh in, don't you think? And make the biography, make the portrait of the person as well-rounded as it can possibly be. I know, you know, your listeners probably will really care a lot to know what insight you have on her and her role, and you've you know, you said plenty of that already. We didn't know we were going to get onto her, but this, I'm so glad that we're talking about her.
I am too. And actually, both Candace, otherwise known as Candida Royale, and Nina Hartley, and Richard Pacheco, who was another male actor, you know, I'm sure, from the golden age of porn.
Yes.
All three of them were on this radio show about 7 years ago. Because I've been with Progressive Radio Network now for over 10 years. And then I had a couple of shows done with just Candace individually. And, I still miss her. Well, we should move on. We were going to talk about this being Men's Health Week.
Yeah.
Good vibrations. Should we end up the show with a little talk about that?
Yes, I think that would be great.
Okay.
You know, it's Men's Health Week everywhere, but of course, when we hear the word health at Good Vibrations, we pivot to sexual health right away. And you know, some health related entities don't really say much about sexual health. So any urologist and any sex therapist knows that there are plenty of men who are worried about the way their sexual functioning is going, you know, erection issues, all kinds of things are part and parcel of what might concern men around their sexual health. But just as I was talking about exhibitionism, I always want to remind men and anybody with a penis, whatever they call it, that appendage getting hard and engaging in intercourse is only one of the splendid elements of sexuality that they can enjoy. And so often in our culture, I think men get the message that their sexuality is only as healthy as their ability to get erect. And while looking at health and erections is certainly relevant, when we put together our page of sexual health things at Good Vibes this week, we wanted to also talk about getting good information and reading books. We wanted to talk about prostate health and the terrific products. Some are anal toys, but some are Aneros prostate health products that people can explore both for pleasure and to basically massage the prostate. And we wanted to make sure that we remembered Safer Sex, because, of course, Safer Sex is still a thing. We still don't know for sure. Some researchers think that COVID can be found in semen. So if that's the case, it makes Safer Sex yet another level of important for us. So we wanted to bring all of these things to front of mind, because any pleasure can be healthful, can be good for us, can help us deal with the anxiety of COVID and injustice and worrying about our jobs and families and everything, and taking our own pleasure seriously in all the ways that that might look. Gender affirmation products, all kinds of things are all relevant, we think, to men. And we're not sure the mainstream medical organizations are going to say a word about some of those things. So we figured we'd better step into the breach.
I think it's great that you're doing this, and you're very current, because you have going on Thursday, so in a couple of days, a Zoom conversation, The Monster Under the Bed, talking sex and depression with Jo Ellen Natte. Is that how she pronounced her not?
Natte, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes by the Redhead Bedhead. Some of your listeners.
Oh, the Redhead Bedhead. Okay.
That's her. And she has written the definitive book about depression and sex. And we just thought, you know, this is a time when talking about mental health and issues like that will seem so relevant to so many people. And she did her own research in working up to writing this book. She herself has a history dealing with depression, so she knows what yes. she's talking about. And so we're going to have a conversation on Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on Zoom. We're going to release the Zoom link on Thursday morning on the Good Vibrations social media channels, on Facebook, on Twitter, and on Instagram. We've got accounts in all those places under Good Vibes Toys. And so people who are interested in Good Vibes Toys.
Okay, and they can also get, they can get this information by going to goodvibes.com too?
Yes, I believe so. I'll make sure that we have it on the website somewhere as well. And also Joellen's book is available on the website. So if people have a history with depression, or if they love someone who does deal with depression, they might want to take a look at her terrific book.
Absolutely. I'm going to tune in. I think it's a conversation that needs to, especially these days, so many people are depressed, and understandably. And so you're going to be interviewing her on this
Zoom conversation? I'm going to have a variety of questions, make sure she gets a chance to say what she wants to say about her whole process of writing the book and her findings and all of that. And then hopefully we'll have some time to let people get into that Zoom chat function and ask some of their own questions.
Don't we live in a whole new world now with our Zooming?
Yes, we really do.
Learning how to mute your window and how to speak up. And but even those
share
of
our
us.
PowerPoints.
Yes, PowerPoints. And I have a husband who's also my tech master, because I'm not as familiar with all technology stuff, partly because of my age. But I'm learning. You have to learn. You have to stay current. You know, with
I've just been doing
my sessions on Zoom.
Sure.
And, yeah.
You know, we probably acknowledged this last time how much worse this pandemic would be on all of us if there weren't a way to stay in contact when we're quarantining. Oh my goodness! So I'm just grateful for it.
The current Time magazine has a beautiful and poignant article written by Lauren Slater, and it's all about her own. Let's see, what is it? I don't remember the title of the article, but it's all about depression and her depression, and how we are, all of us, well, I don't know about all of us, but many people are on the brink of sliding into despair.
Yeah.
With all that's going on. And so we really need to pay attention to our mental health. And if you're in a, I don't know about this firsthand. I've been situationally depressed with the death of my last husband, Charlie, whom you met when you were promoting your book, Exhibitionism for the Shy. And by the way, Candace visited Hawaii. We had the most wonderful time, she and her boyfriend, when I lived there. And so this can be very important to pay attention to depression and also to have sex. I mean, a big part of sex and the positive aspects of it is that it actually helps improve or boost the immune system.
Yes.
And it can make for less possible depression and anxiety. I'm now reading this, the healthy aspects of sexuality. Sex has been shown to ward off colds, flu, and other infections by increasing the levels of the antibody immunoglobulin, and that's A-I-G-A. It makes sense, then, that sexually active people take fewer sick days than those who abstain, and that they know from some research. And then a Zurich study found that sex reduces cortisol and increases oxytocin, which, of course, then encourages positive communication and provides a reduction of stressful situations that might happen because of an argument. So, of course, that's what my book is all about, too, getting couples who are in quarantine together to find out more about each other, to rebuild their sexual relationship, get on track. And it's good for them, good for stress and anxiety and depression.
I think
sex
making
is so
this
good
healthy
for us.
Is so important because, you know, people who have received negative messages about sex, this is never part of the message. You know, that we hear that sex is unhealthy as much as we hear that it's healthy, right? And in the past, that was often the main message, this worry that we were going to do it too much or the wrong kind or with the wrong person. Oh, my goodness. I mean, all this anxiety coming along with it. And I think it's worth remembering that our sexuality, our sexual feelings and functioning can be the canary in the mine shaft for health problems, too. If we've had a good sex life and it starts to slide, it's worth going to the doctor and being really frank about it, because healthy sexuality is part of most of our healthy lives, and taking it seriously is always important.
Carol, thank you so much for another great show. We'll have you back very soon. The music is playing, which means the show is over.
Yes, I gathered as much. Thank you again. This has been such a treat.
Thank you. Tune in again, listening audience, in 2 weeks, and you'll hear more from Dr. Diana. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Be safe. Play safe.